their source, these two natures. All that is material and all that is spiritual in this world know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Everything that exists is a product of matter and spirit. Spirit is the basic field of creation, and matter is created by spirit. Spirit is not created at a certain stage of material development. Rather, this material world is manifested only on the basis of spiritual energy. That the Jivatma, the spirit soul, is of a marginal nature. It is of the same quality of the Supreme Lord Himself, Satchit Ananda. Within the heart of every living being is a person. And the personal attributes are that he or she is eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. The origin of every soul is of this spiritual nature. However, having free will, at every moment throughout eternity, the spirit soul is given choice. When that spirit soul misuses its free will, it comes under the influence of the material energy. Where everything is essentially dead. The soul comes into dead matter and gives it mobility. The illusion is when the soul thinks that its identity is the dead matter. This material body is dead. The soul comes in it and animates it. That is not a problem. But when the soul forgets its own eternal nature and thinks that I am this body, that is illusion. That is Maya. Maya means that which is not. To think you are something or someone you are not is an illusion. The material creation is going on since time immemorial. On the basis of this illusion, everyone thinking that they are this body, and thus depriving themselves of the spiritual nature of their own existence. Dhruva Maharaj was seeking a kingdom greater than Lord Brahma's. But by the grace of Narada Muni, in order to get that, he was constantly meditating on the Lord within his heart, performing severe tapasyas, so that he could completely center all of his energies on the Lord in his heart. That is actually the reason for tapasya. When people fast, when people give up sleeping, when people control their breath, control the movements of their bodies. According to the yogic principle, the actual purpose of that is to enable you to have deeper and deeper concentration and absorption in the object of the meditation, which is the Lord within your heart. Dhruva Maharaj was constantly chanting the holy names by the grace of Narada Muni. And thus, through the process of meditating on Krishna, always remembering Krishna, he became purified. All his desire and all his aversions in this world were removed because he experienced the higher taste. He experienced love of God. Where there is love of God, it is like an ocean, vast, unlimited ocean. And all the pleasures of this world are like polluted little puddles and compared to this pure, transparent ocean of nectar. That is what the acharyas who taste love of God say. It is like diving into an ocean of nectar and endlessly drinking that immortal nectar. And once you taste that, then any pleasure of this world, whatever it is, from Brahma Loka down to Patala Loka, it is all like little puddles of poisonous, muddy, contaminated sewage. That's all. And yet, we have given up the right to that nectar to chase after these puddles of polluted sewage. Please forgive the harsh language, but it is the truth. We don't mean to insult anyone, but the scriptures tell us to give us the understanding of where our real happiness is. It is in Krishna. So Dhruva Maharaj saw the Lord Narayan and he explained, "My Lord, I was looking for broken pieces of glass, but I found the most precious diamond of your darshan." So he was comparing a kingdom greater than Brahma with the longevity and all the pleasures therein to be broken pieces of glass and compared to the invaluable jewel of the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the spirit soul, under the conditionings of the three modes of material nature, is just the opposite. We have forsaken the most precious diamond of love of Krishna to search after, to struggle for the broken pieces of glass of this earthly existence. Krishna is the origin and the dissolution of everything of this world. But Krishna is beyond this world. He is inviting us to his supreme abode. But in order to take seriously the path of devotional service, we have to understand what is matter, what is spirit, and what is the relationship of the two. When we take to spiritual life in this material world, there is danger at every step. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. The fact is, there is danger at every step, on every level, as long as we are in this material existence. On the physical level, we do not know what will happen at the next moment. In Bombay, we have seen, just down the road, people are just sitting in their flats, in their offices, and all of a sudden the whole building caves in. You have seen? Worli? Buildings just fall down. And they're nice buildings. And when there is an earthquake, even the nicest buildings fall down. In fact, according to many astrologers throughout the world, it's going to happen today. How many of you have heard about this prophecies? I believe it's in newspapers and magazines. Even one very, very great Vaishnav saintly person, a year and a half ago, he said July 4th, 1999. And this celebrated seer of future events, Nostradamus of France, he predicted. And astrologers, prophets, clairvoyant seers, they are usually disagreeing, but many are agreeing about this. That July of 1999 will be year of disaster. And especially July 4th. They are saying there will be cyclones, there will be earthquakes, there will be fires, there will be riots and massacres, there may be nuclear bombs falling. Mass destruction of the whole human race is supposed to happen today. Now, we're not saying it's going to happen or not going to happen. We're saying, padam padam yad vipadam natesh. Anything could happen at any moment. So we are not defending or offending any of these ideas. Anything that helps us become more serious about Krishna consciousness, we're happy to talk about. So, there is danger at every step. Driving in the highways, traveling in a train, walking down the street, sitting at home. At any moment, just your heart can just go droop and you're dead. Most people that get heart attacks die practically instantly. And it used to be years ago that old people got heart attacks, but now there's no discrimination. These attacks can come to practically anyone at any time. I've heard stories of someone, a young person, getting his physical exam, and cardiology says, very nice, very nice, and on his way home he has heart attacks and dies. And then they ask cardiologists, what happened? He said, I don't know. So this is the nature of this world. Here in India, you see two countries with their nuclear bombs very nicely pointed toward each other. And Bombay is not an obscure place either. It's quite prominent. But anywhere you are, if you're in the Arctic Circle, there may not be nuclear bombs pointed at you, but you'll slip on the ice, crack your head, and die at any moment. There's danger at every step in this world. It is a reality on the physical level. On the mental, emotional level, danger at every step. Even if everything is just according to all of your plans, anxieties can strike your mind at any provocation. Your loved ones can cheat you. There can be massive disagreements, outrage within your own family. People can insult you. Your hopes and your dreams can fail you. This happens all the time. When it happens to you, don't be surprised. It's the nature of this world. There is danger at every step. We shouldn't complain and think, why is the world doing this to me? Krishna's told you, you're in a world of danger at every step. Get out! Don't complain about it not being what you want it to be. It will never be what you want it to be. at any moment, you could conquer the world. But if one person says one thing that you don't like, your whole life will be in shambles. And spiritually, there's danger at every step. Maya has all her forces targeted right toward you. If you think Pakistan's nuclear bombs pointed at you are dangerous, that's nothing. The worst it can do is this body goes away. But if you're thinking of Krishna, very nice. Let it go. Back to Godhead. But Maya is trying to, at every moment, somehow or other, divert our attention away from God. Moment after moment after moment, she's sending her astras to kill this Krishna consciousness within us. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very attentive. We have to take all precautions. What does it mean to take precautions? It means, first of all, you have to be humble. You have to understand how vulnerable you are. Then you will take precautions. Just like in the United States of America, it's a law. Everyone has to wear safety belts when they drive in automobiles. Because motor accidents can come to anyone at any time when you're driving on the road. And most motor accidents where people die is within only a couple miles of their home. It's not when they're traveling from city to city across the country. It can happen to anyone. You can be the safest driver. In the New York Times, I want to tell you some of the things India's famous for. In the New York Times, there was a statistic that over 90% of the truck drivers in the country of India are highly drunk and intoxicated on alcohol and drugs. Now, in the Western countries, if you have a fraction of 1% of alcohol in your blood, you lose your license and you're not allowed to drive again for at least 10 years and you get put in prison. Because drunken people driving is the main cause of death. Now here in your land, these truck drivers, according to statistic, 90% of them are very highly drunken and intoxicated. And the roads are big enough for either you or me. So one moment of inattentiveness of their part, and they drive into you, and you're fully attentive. But what will that do? And nobody even has seat safety belts in India, hardly. I was thinking, this is a plan to reduce the population. Don't put safety belts in the automobiles. But if you're actually a little humble and you think there is danger at every step, this body belongs to Krishna, you put it on. You know the monsoons are coming, you fix your roof nicely because you want to protect your family. You take certain medical exams or something to just be precautious. Unless we're precautious in this world, there is great, great danger. So spiritually, we must be very strict. Every day, if we're humble, we'll know I have to chant my rounds. And I have to chant them attentively. Because anything could happen today. And if I remember Krishna, I'm safe. It doesn't matter what happens. We have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita carefully every day. If we're proud, we don't take precautions. If we're humble, we know that if we offend Vaishnavas, if we engage in sinful activities, it will cause great ruination to my spiritual life. If I mix with people who are too much materialistic, if I don't have nice association of strong devotees, the Maya can capture me at any moment. And the fact is, she will. If you are not cautious, she will take you away. That is fact. Even the greatest nations, when they become proud, inattentive, they fall. The Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, the British Empire, the Mughal Empire, they all fell. They all considered themselves indestructible. We were speaking the other day about one of the most historical, symbolic instances that took place on this planet. Krishna reveals certain lessons throughout history. In the early 1900s, the largest and safest boat that was ever made was to take its maiden voyage. This boat, it was the largest boat ever made. And it was made with so much money. The best engineers, the best craftsmen, the best architects, the best everyone came together and spent millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to create this boat. It was declared to be the first boat ever made that was unsinkable. This was the propaganda when they were advertising. The unsinkable ship. What they did is the bottom of the boat is called the hull. They made not just one, but two layers. And then they made 16 compartments. And they divided those the 16 compartments with such formidable structural that even if one, two, three, or four of the compartments broke open within the ship, still the ship could go across the entire Atlantic Ocean with no problem. So they said, this is an unsinkable boat. And it was very costly to drive on it. It was advertised throughout the planet. So the first journey, the aristocracy from various parts of the world wanted to be a part of this historic event. It was so luxurious. It was like a palace. There were chandeliers, there were hand carvings, there was the most modern facilities in the planet on this boat. So it was in April of 1912 that this boat left London, Southampton, England, from the port where it was constructed. And it, all news media, gallant celebration as it was leaving on its way to New York City. Hare Krishna. The name of the boat was Titanic. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he took the Jaladuta across the Atlantic. That was just an old, beat-up Indian cargo ship. There was nobody throwing bottles of champagne on it as it was taking off from the Calcutta harbor. But Prabhupada made it. And he wrote. So this Titanic, it is said that they were so proud that it was just so perfect that they didn't take precautions. There was about 2,000 and 2,300 people on that ship. And they had enough lifeboats for everyone. But before the journey, some of the high people of the shipping lines, they were walking along the corridors, and there were all these lifeboats on the corridors. And they thought, it's not very aesthetically pleasing to the passengers. All these wealthy people, they will have a much nicer time if there's big, wide corridors where they can walk with their romantic partner back and forth and see the ocean and not have to walk around these lifeboats. So just take them off. We don't need them. This boat is unsinkable. It's a fact. They talk off over half the lifeboats just so it looked prettier. So the boat could provide better quality of sense gratification. They were sailing, and everyone was drinking and having illicit sex and playing music and dancing and just thinking, we're the most fortunate people in the world. We'll be in history that we were on the first voyage of Titanic. And actually, they were right. Much more than they expected. If that boat would have made it to New York, we would have forgot about it long ago. So they were going. And they even decided to go faster than they were supposed to go because they wanted to show their prowess and arrive early. Because all the newspapers, televisions, everyone was waiting in New York for the arrival. Anyways, in the North Atlantic, on this very vast, dark ocean, it was at night, just before midnight, that going full speed, they crashed against an iceberg. By the inconceivable arrangement of Providence, five of the chambers broke open. Any four could break open and the ship would make it, but five broke open. It was a shock to everyone. And they were looking around. There was nowhere to go. The water was ice cold. Sharks, whales, all kinds of eager fish. Even the most talented, self-sufficient, self-made men of the time, they were in total helpless position. The boat was going down, and everyone wanted a lifeboat. However, half the lifeboats were left in England. Over 1,500 people found their resting place in the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Why? Very simple. False pride. They wanted to defy the laws of basic safety because they thought they were something very special. In the same way, in spiritual life, we are trying to cross over the ocean of material existence. And this human life is like a boat. And there are so many icebergs. They're everywhere. Actually, it is said that there was another boat. The whole time the Titanic was sinking, there was another boat only 20 miles away from it all night long, 32 kilometers away. And what happened is the person who was manning the radio of that other boat, he fell asleep. And he forgot to turn on the radio. If he had his radio on, it could have taken him hardly 15, 20 minutes, half hour to get there and rescue everyone. But the radio wasn't turned on. So we should always keep our radio turned on. To hear the transcendental words of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we should be very, very precautious. In this ocean of material existence, there is so many dangers. If we take a humble position, always remain sincerely within the association of devotees, very, very much knowing the necessity of chanting every day, of hearing every day, of following these four regulative principles, of not committing offenses, then it is certain Krishna will carry us across this ocean of material existence in due course of time. Otherwise, we will sink. Danger is there for everyone. But that is Krishna's arrangement. If there wasn't danger at every step, even the sincerest devotee would probably be complacent. But knowing the reality, if we're sincere, we will be very, very attentive not to give in to Maya for a second. Because this breath could be the last breath. The majority of astrologers say that the odds are this will be the last day of your life, July 4th. In America, this is a very special holiday, July 4th. It's called Independence Day. This is the day America formally gained independence from Great Britain. I think your Independence Day is August 15th. So there's many things in common in this world. So in America, there are blasting of bombs and firecrackers and everything going on. And when Srila Prabhupada heard about this festivity of independence, celebrating independence, he said, we want to celebrate our dependence on Krishna. Only when you have complete dependence on Krishna are you independent of birth and death within this ocean of material existence. So really, for as devotees, as long as we're hearing, as long as we're chanting, as long as we're nice association, then let whatever's going to happen, happen. We should take all precautions, but ultimately, if we remember Krishna, our life is perfect. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a story of the Brijabasis headed by Nanda Maharaj. They observed Ekadasi. This was a special Ekadasi. It was an Ekadasi where its beginning and end was within a very short amount of time. And the Ekadasi actually formally ended before the sunrise on the day of Dwadasi. So Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, they observed Ekadasi. And very early in the morning, while it was still very dark, they went to Jamuna to take their bath. So Nanda Maharaj took his bath, and one of the messengers of Varuna, according to his calculation, Nanda Maharaj was bathing at an inauspicious time. Therefore, he must be punished. Now, this is Dwapara Yuga. We can understand in Dwapara Yuga how responsible you were about every little detail of your life. Can you imagine in Kali Yuga? If we just violated these little detailed injunctions of the scriptures, we would all be somewhere else. Because in Kali Yuga, people have no capacity to follow properly, therefore, they're not responsible. But for the serious matters, still same responsibility. Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, very, very serious sinful reactions come from these things. So Nanda Maharaj was taken by this messenger like a prisoner and brought to Varuna. Meanwhile, the cowherd men were bathing with Nanda Maharaj. All of a sudden, he disappeared. He just went under the water and he never came up again. So they were very much in distress. They were searching everywhere for Nanda Maharaj, but they couldn't find him. So the Brijabasis, whenever any difficulty takes place that is beyond their control, we all know who they turn to. Krishna. So they all began to very, very loudly chant Krishna's holy name.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
O Rama, O Krishna, please find Nanda Maharaj, save him, we cannot find him. Krishna always hears the calling of his devotees. And this is very instructive, that when devotees call upon Krishna to help another devotee, or to help one who is dear to a devotee, Krishna certainly helps. We find when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving benedictions to his devotees during the Mahaprakash at Srivas Thakur's house, many people were asking these benedictions. Please give bhakti to my mother, my father, my wife, my husband, my children, my friends. Give them bhakti. According to Chaitanya Bhagavat, one person asked, "My Lord, my father doesn't let me come here. Please make him favorable so he lets me come here." This is in the scripture. Another person was asking, "Please, I'm the most wretched, fallen rascal. Give me devotion. Forgive me for my sins." But mostly they were asking benedictions for others, not for themselves. For those who were dear to them. And the Lord was granting all those benedictions. Prahlad Maharaj asked, when he was offered a benediction, he asked nothing for himself. He said, "My father, give him liberation. Forgive him for what he has done." So the Brijabasis were praying to Krishna to help Nanda Maharaj. So Krishna, immediately, he went into the river Jamuna. From there, he entered into the ocean and went right to the kingdom of Varuna, the lord of the sea. When Krishna arrived, Nanda Maharaj was already sitting on a jeweled throne next to Varuna. Varuna was a Vaishnava. He understood that Nanda Maharaj was a great soul. So when he was brought as a prisoner, to the great surprise of this servant of his, he put Nanda Maharaj on a throne and worshipped him, and was just waiting for Krishna to come to deliver him. So when Krishna came, Varuna gave Krishna a wonderful reception. He gave him throne, washed his feet, offered arti, offered gifts, and started to pray to Krishna that you are the supreme omniscient personality of Godhead. You are the controller of all the material and spiritual worlds. You are my master. You are the master of all. My servant was a rascal and a fool. Therefore, he arrested your father for no good reason at all. Actually, according to Jiva Goswami, Nanda Maharaj did not take bath at the wrong time. He took bath at the right time. It was the messenger of Varuna who miscalculated and arrested him. Hare Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that various incidences and demons represented different anartas on the path of Braj Bhakti. And this demon, who was the messenger of Varuna, who arrested Nanda Maharaj, he represents intoxication. One of the great, great obstacles for spiritual progress is intoxication. Can you all understand how he represents intoxication? Because he had a high and powerful position. He had authority. And he was so intoxicated by that authority that he did not even consider the importance of Nanda Maharaj, the father of the supreme personality of Godhead, a great devotee. Because he was so intoxicated by his authority and his position and his relationship with such a great person as Varuna, he did not humble himself to think that he could make a mistake. He was thinking the mistake is in others. And therefore he was condemned. So we must guard against this. The more we're put in a position, the more naturally we have the tendency to become intoxicated by that position. If we have money, if we have education, if we have high birth, if we have physical strength, if we have various abilities, if we have some hierarchical position, even in spiritual circles of society, the tendency is to become intoxicated, to think I have certain rights and authorities over others. And in that state, we do not consider what other people's position may actually be. Srila Prabhupada warned us that all the devotees around us, he said, you do not know who they are. What they were in previous lives, you don't know. They may be a new bhakta or a new bhaktin, just coming and saying, can you tell me, what is your philosophy? Why do you wear this clay on your face? They might be asking those questions now, but they may have been great mahatmas who have performed severe austerities, who have done volumes and volumes and volumes of devotional service in their last life, and Krishna's just bringing them back to the path. They may be thousands of lifetimes ahead of us in spiritual life. And we're saying, yes, you are not this body. You should take this prasad from my hands. And you come every week, and I will instruct you. That person may be temporary in a position of subordination, but he be a very, very great Vaishnava who will soar to heights of devotional ecstasies very quickly. And we'll be sitting back saying, what happened? This isn't proper. I'm the guru. That person should be under me. So we should not think that because we have some position that we can mistreat or offend anyone. Because if we do, due to this intoxication, we'll have to pay serious consequences. Therefore, the only safe consciousness is Trinarapi Sunichena Tara Ivasihishvana Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Satahani. To be humble, tolerant, respectful, detached, and to always chant Hare Krishna. And when someone mistreats another Vaishnava, their master is even displeased. Varuna called his servant a fool and a rascal. He had no right to do this. But we all have that tendency. It's like a demon living within all of us. That we have to be very, very cautious and careful to defend ourselves from. By humble service, by Srimad Bhagavat Katha, by chanting Harinam, by respecting all. Ananda Maharaj, it is also explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the acharyas evaluate these pastimes from so many different points of view, from so many different angles of vision, just to bring out different spiritual truths to help us to make spiritual progress. He says another obstacle that this represents is trying to enter into ecstatic ras prematurely. Hare Krishna. Who would like to explain how this story illustrates that? The Jamuna is the ambrosial nectarine river of ras. Now, according to one angle of vision, Nanda Maharaj was trying to enter into the river of Ras prematurely, before it was the right time, and therefore he was arrested and punished. So similarly, Rupa Goswami explains, Ado Shudatata Sadhu Sangota Bhajanakriya Tato Nartanavishtisha Tato Nishtaruchistata, that we must proceed in our spiritual life stage by stage. We begin in a humble position, inquiring submissively, rendering service, taking initiation, following our vows, chanting every day, serving very conscientiously, hearing the glories of the Lord. And gradually we become purified. We obtain very, very deep faith. and the higher rasas of Krishna consciousness at the proper stage, we naturally develop the capacity by which we can realize and taste the sweetness of those rasas. But the sahaja consciousness is without rules, without regulations, without proper adhikar or qualifications. We just try to go right to the ecstatic rasas of Braja. And by doing so, you will be arrested. In other words, all your spiritual progress will be arrested. You will make no real progress. So this is also a very important lesson from the story. However, from a higher point of view, Nanda Maharaj actually bathed at the perfect time, although it appeared he came too early. So he was faultless. And the fact is, whatever he did, he was only doing for the pleasure and the service of Krishna. So even if there is a mistake in the service of Krishna, it's perfect if we have that consciousness of humble devotion. Srila Prabhupada once said that, "I don't make mistakes." He was trying to instruct disciples. Now, from a relative material conception, it appeared he made a mistake. Now, from worldly eyes, mistake may be that you put the wrong color flower in the wrong order according to the flower-making science. However, if you're doing it in sincere and humble love and devotion, that Krishna likes that wrong order more than the right order. So you may know the science of garland making so very expertly. You may have PhD in garland making. And you say, "Mataji, what is this? Why this red one is in front of the blue one? The blue one should be in front of the red one, and the orange one should be next. This is the science, don't you know?" Hare Krishna. But if that was made with that mistake in a sense of devotion, and Krishna has accepted it, and your correcting is simply an illusion. So Krishna, anything that is done in sincere devotion, in pure devotion, is perfect in the eyes of God. And that's what it means, that whatever a pure devotee does is perfect because his motives are perfect, or her motives are perfect. They're to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. Even if material based by standards, they're all wrong. Prabhupada, when he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, he quoted from that famous verse that in the glorification of the Lord, even if that glorification is not composed properly, because it is done with sincere devotion, it is praised by the most saintly learned people. So when Varuna was worshipping and glorifying Krishna in this way, Nanda Maharaj was astonished, because all the while he thought that Krishna is just his little son, a cowherd boy. And here is the Lord of the oceans, Varuna, honoring him, worshipping him. And how he honored and worshipped Nanda Maharaj just because he was Krishna's father. So Varuna said, "Please, I'm so grateful that you came to give me your darshan. Now you can take your father back to Vrindavan." So Krishna took Nanda Maharaj back to Vrindavan. And Nanda Maharaj was so astonished. He was telling all the cowherd men, "You know what I saw? You'll never believe this. Little Gopal, he came into the royal emperor of the seas palace. And Varuna Dev worshipped him. He prayed to him that he's the supreme personality of Godhead. He's the master of all the demigods. He's the absolute truth. This is what I heard him say." And the cowherd men were so much happy to hear this. They were astonished that Krishna's God. Little Gopal is God. He's the ultimate goal of life. He's been living with us all these years. We didn't even know that. So in their hearts, they were thinking, if Krishna's God, I wonder if he'll show us where we're going after we leave this body. Will he show us the spiritual sky? So Krishna knew their hearts. He took them to what later on became known as Akrura Ghat. Do you remember during Vrindavan Yatra, those who came? We spent one morning at Akrura Ghat. At that particular place, Krishna performed a wonderful pastime. He had all the cowherd men enter into the Jamuna. While we were in Jamuna, he showed them Krishna Loka, the supreme planet of the spiritual sky. All around Krishna Loka, they saw the divine light of the Brahma Jyoti. Just as this material existence is compared to an ocean, the spiritual sky, it is compared that the Brahma Jyoti is an effulgent, ever-luminous spiritual light, which is like an ocean, just spreading in all directions. And the various planets called Vaikuntha Lokas are floating in that spiritual light. And in each Vaikuntha planet, there is a particular form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who lives eternally and reciprocates forever with the love of his devotees. Narasingha, Matsya, Lord Ramchandra, they are all there. But the highest and most perfect of all Vaikuntha planets is Krishna Loka, the place where Radha Krishna are eternally performing their supreme pastimes with their devotees. So they saw the Vaikunthas. They saw the spiritual sky. They saw Krishna Loka. And to their great amazement, what did they see on Krishna Loka? The exact same thing that they saw in Vrindavan where they lived. They saw Govardhan, and they saw cows in Jamuna, and they saw gopas and gopis, and they saw Krishna playing his flute. They saw the personified Vedas coming to offer their prayers to Krishna. All of their desires were fulfilled. In Vrindavan, the Brijabasi's love for Krishna is so pure and so sweet that the understanding or the awareness of his hierarchical position as the creator, as the supreme, the controller, or God, is forgotten. The example is given by acharyas that if you're a criminal, then the authority of the state, the judge, the police, their controlling factor is very much in your consciousness. Correct? But if you're just a very law-abiding, loving citizen, then you're not really seeing so much the controlling capacity of a policeman. You could make friends with him. You could talk with him. You can joke with him. But if you're a criminal, you won't do like that. So similarly, in this material world, it is very, very important to understand how Krishna is the supreme controller so that we will obey. And in Vaikuntha, everyone understands that God is the God of all. In pure love, not in fear, like this world. But in Vrindavan, in Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, Madhuryaras, there is such loving intimacy that even though they know Krishna is God, it's so subordinate to knowing Krishna as the supreme object of love that it's forgotten. But every now and then we find in Krishna's Leela, when he appeared in this world, they remember. So they saw the spiritual sky. But what did they see in the spiritual sky? They saw the same place that they were living right here in Bhoma Vrindavan. And that is the ultimate home and destination that we are all striving to achieve. But the path back home, back to Godhead, is full of dangers. We must be humble. We must be precautious. We must seek shelter of good sadhana every day. We must seek shelter of the association of devotees. We must be very aware not to make offenses, not to commit sinful activities. Otherwise, however big, however great, however learned we may be, however unsinkable we think we are, remember Titanic. And in that remembrance, take shelter of Krishna, Krishna's service, and Krishna's name.